Episode of Forever Bristol City podcast. We're into June already. Before we know where we are, the lads will be back for pre-season training. But I'm delighted to welcome former player and media pundit Gary Hours and a regular on the podcast. Ian, Gary, you've been away on holiday enjoying the sun, yes? Or not?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been on holiday. There wasn't much sun, unfortunately. I went off to Mallorca for a week. And I actually looked at the weather forecast before I went, and it was disaster, rain every day. So I should be thankful, I think, that I managed to get 3.5 days of sunshine.
Yeah. I'll just sit with you, Gary. I'll just say about the playoffs, because they're all done and dusted now. I guess you saw one or maybe both of Sunderland's attempts. They did well to get in the top six, something I predicted at the start of the season, but a lot of glum faces up there, yeah?
Yeah, it's quite ironic. I mean, I was fortunate in November during the break for the World Cup. I managed to get off to Dubai with a friend of mine who runs training camps, and actually looked after Luton and Sunderland and Stoke and Bournemouth. So I seen Sunderland close up and I seen Luton close up. I have to say Luton trained harder than anybody out there in the hot sun as well. So it's no surprise that they done so well. But yeah, Tony Mowbray done a great job and got Sunderland obviously into a good position and probably fancied the chances in fairness against Luton. But Luton were victorious and went on to win the final. So fair play, I say. Brilliant achievement for them. And if you look at that, you know, we're going to talk about Bristol City, and you think the playoff final was Luton Town against Coventry.
Yeah, no excuses, no playoff, no golden parachute money there, was there? Ian, sticking just to sort of talk about the playoffs, coming up from League One, Plymouth, Sheffield Wednesday and Ipswich. Yeah, I mean, that Sheffield Wednesday, those two games against Peterborough, you know, that was incredible that they came through it, although again they finished third, so I think, didn't they? Yeah, so rightly promoted, like Luton were.
Yeah, I think they deserved it. I got some of the predictions half right because I went for Luton to win the playoffs. I went for Stockport in the division below, and I also, well, I suppose 2/3 right because I did say I thought Wednesday would go through, but I also had a sneaking feeling for Barnsley because I saw Barnsley beat Sheffield Wednesday this season. And I thought Barnsley were absolutely at the Oakwell, and I thought Barnsley were absolutely terrific that night. And I like what the manager's done there. But the way I see it for this season, Dave, with the teams in the division, we've got five clubs coming into the division that are bigger than we are, and I'm talking in terms of attendance.
Well, that's why it's going to get a bit difficult. Let's talk about next season towards the end. Right. Gary, Bristol City's season, I listen to you when you're on Radio Bristol. You probably see a lot of the away games as well.
I think I've seen them all this year.
What would you give the overall the season out of 10?
I think 6.5 because it started with much promise, really exciting attacking forward play. And then obviously the wheels come off a little bit heading towards Christmas. And then just sort of nearly got themselves going again at the end when it was probably too little too late. And when all's said and done, I think you look at the points on the board and the position in the table. You'll tell us if I'm wrong. We'll probably improve two positions.
Yeah, so 14. I mean, the last three seasons has gone 19th, 17th, 14th. So it's baby steps, isn't it, really?
Yeah. So if, you know, we're going to be here a long time waiting to get in the playoffs or get promoted, if that's the size of the steps that we're taking. So we need to take bigger steps.
I like your 6.5 out of 10. Ian, is that something you'd endorse as well? 6.5?
Yeah, the way, and I've explained my marking previously on the podcast. I mean, I can run through it quickly, but I'm giving the season 5.5, which is unusual for me because I don't like giving half marks. But basically, we've won the same number of games as we won last season, and we won the season before.
Mm.
So we won 15 games out of 46. What we've done in those seasons is we've turned defeats into draws. So each season we've lost less games, but we haven't won any more. So ipso facto, we've drawn more games. Now, it's true to say that we finished 10 points shy. Well, with a goal difference, it would have been 11 points needed to finish sixth. But the division this year, as I said right the way through the season, and that's why I said our best chance of reaching the playoffs was this season. The season we've just had, I mean, not the one coming. It was 75 points was required to get you in the playoffs the season before in sixth place. It was 69.
I think that's the lowest it's ever been, isn't it, for sixth?
I think it might have been 64 one year, Dave, but yeah, that sometimes it's been thick end of 80. And despite what Mark Ashton said on Ian King Live, no, we haven't. We didn't consistently finish just outside the playoffs all the time he was here. especially the Tammy Abraham season when we escaped relegation by about 4 points, I think, in the skin of our teeth.
Oh, we did.
Where I'm coming from with that 5.5, a six for me would have been if, say, we'd have finished 12th or 11th, I would have given a six. You don't get a seven from me until you reach the playoffs. Then you get an eight if you get to the final. And then you get a nine if you win the playoff final. And you get 10 if you get promoted automatically.
Auto.
Okay. Now, that's just how I see it. So
yeah. I think you're a little bit harsh with one or two of those marks there. But I think, you know, most people would get... We finished in the top six. Had we done, and even next season... Most people would give that an eight next season to finish in the top six.
Yeah, Gary,
we started.
You can look at other things. I mean, I think we all want Bristol City to finish higher up the table, but and that's how I would judge the season. But you can argue that the sold Semenyo for £8 million and that they've developed Alex Scott to be a £25 million player and Tommy Conway and Sam Bell. So there are other things going on there that you might take into the equation as well if you want to.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's valid points. I mean, sticking with you, Gary, as you say, the start of the season, first eight, we actually lost the first two, but then we went on that six-match unbeaten run. But then I looked at it. The next 20 games, right, that runs up to the two draws that were the start of the unbeaten run in the new year. But the next 20 games, we won only 3 out of 20 because sadly the Queen died and the Preston game was postponed. And then we only won 2 of the next 11 before credible draws against Watford and Borough prior to the World Cup. You know, it was that's a dreadful period, isn't it? It's half a season of appalling form.
Yeah, shocking. Like Ian's backed his argument up with stats. How many points short? 10 points short?
Mm. Yeah, well, 11 with goal difference.
11, there's, and they won 3 out of 20. So if they played them 20 games again, they'd probably get 11 points, I would argue. But, yeah, it wasn't good. And Nigel found himself under a bit of pressure. I recall the game on Boxing Day, I think it was, against
West Brom. Yeah,
fans not happy. And he was probably close, you know, very, very close. The next two games were
Draws away at Luton,
Millwall, and Coventry.
Yeah, Coventry. So,
still playing 5 at the back. And to this day, I will argue that if Swansea hadn't turned up in the FA Cup and played as well as it did in the first half, it might never have changed because they forced them to do something different.
Yeah,
outplayed City, and the score wasn't, you know. It was the amount of possession that they had and the way that they dominated the ball. And at half-time, we changed it. And I don't think from that point, you ever look back.
No, I think you're right. That is it. I mean, we happened upon playing a back four, didn't we? It wasn't like a
4-3.
I mean, do you think that's a thing? Nigel does seem to get fixated with certain formations, didn't he? Because he signed. I mean, we talk about the departments on the pitch, but you know, he signed the League Two Player of the Year in Kane Wilson. You know, he was going to play, okay, he can play a right back, but essentially he was going to be an attack-minded wing back, you know, and he seemed fixated on that, didn't he?
Well, somebody did. We'll probably, as usual, get round to recruitment, don't you? At some point, we'll probably talk about that.
Oh, yes.
Never featured, never made an impact. Obviously got injured, which hasn't helped his cause, but we've never seen Kane Wilson, and right wing back was a problem early in the season. And I think fair play to George Tanner. As the season went on, he nailed that position down and made it his own, but he was already in the building.
Well, I think that's another point I'd make, Gary, in that what we also did along with the back four, the other big change, is we started putting square pegs in square holes.
Yeah, definitely. Sykes moved forward, scored goals.
Yeah.
You know, going to have an argument about Cal Naismith at some point because he signed as a centre-half.
Yeah.
And he finishes the season playing in central midfield. Now, that wasn't the plan, I am sure. If you ask Cal Naismith when he come from Luton, you're going to Bristol City to play in midfield, he probably wouldn't be here. So he's fallen or found himself, you know, I'm not going to say he's been lucky, but, you know, it wasn't the philosophy. That wasn't the plan at the start of the season, clearly. So
he was signed to play as the talker, the organiser, in the middle of a back three with Rob Atkinson on the left, Thomas Callas on the right. Now, Thomas is injured. So they shoehorn Tim Closer in. Tim Closer couldn't play right centre back for some strange reason. I mean, he was right footed, but he couldn't play there. Then I think his wife had a baby over in Switzerland. And I didn't think, I honestly, he looked like a guy that didn't want to be around the place.
Well, he was one of the ones sent to the land of the banished, wasn't it? Because his last game was that Lincoln game, wasn't it, in the EFL?
But that was the start of the season, and that's why we signed Kane Wilson, because for all the world, we were going to play with wing-backs. And it for a long period, as Gary alluded to, it didn't work. And we got, it was a happy accident against Swansea. Gary's spot on with that. That we reverted to a back four. And, you know, you saw the change in people like Zach Viner, who went from being somebody that we all thought was going to be gone or under the bus, to player's player of the season. And he was my player of the season as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was a bonus, Gary, wasn't it, Zach
Viner?
That wasn't
planning. That was just a happy accident.
Yeah. George Tanner, I think, was success.
Yeah.
Zach Viner.
Campring.
I think Campring's a really, really good player. And all this talk about Joe Bryan, who I know very well, Joe's an excellent player and he'd be a brilliant addition, but where would you play him?
Because let's talk about Joe, because that could drop any day now if media reports are to be believed. I mean, could you see Joe playing in front of Cam, which would give us a very strong left side, and Joe plays that sort of role that O'Dowda played a few times, you know?
He could play there, no doubt about it. And he could play in midfield, but we don't want he coulds. You want the signings to come in and make positions stronger. And for me, Joe Bryan is better coming from behind the ball, running onto things with space in front of him, not receiving the ball in tight areas 1v1 against a defender. So I'd see him as a left back, but then I don't see Cam as a centre-half. He can play there. Terrific attributes, his pace. I don't think I've seen a quicker player play for Bristol City. Rapid. And I'd like to see him play left back because he can get forward, and he is, I mean, can't go play one forward. He can go 1v1 on the outside. We've seen him do that plenty of times. So interesting, really. You know, interesting.
I mean, Cam's improved his fitness as well, it would seem, because I can remember, not this season, well, maybe the early part of the season just gone, but after 60 or 70 minutes, he seemed as though he'd be puffing, whereas, you know, towards the end, where he came on strong, you could see him, like, put the afterburners on. There was a couple of games where he just shot forward. Yeah. Ian, Thomas Kalas, an enigma. Yeah, I mean, he played, what, 40 minutes, one and a half games maybe, since March last year. We still don't know what's happening with him, and, you know, we can't really shape our transfer money, our transfer spend, until he's sorted out, can we?
Well, I think it's unfair on Nigel Pearson and the recruitment team, because at the moment, if Thomas is now out of contract, if he leaves the club, it will leave us with one senior fit centre-back who's right-sided in Zach Viner. Now, unless you're going to bring, you're saying, well, yeah, that's all right, Ian, we know all that. There's talk about Jake O'Brien from Palace. And it could be that they're thinking it might be a breakthrough season for the likes of Joe Lowe, Duncan Idahan, or Rafa Roya. But
it's not. It's not.
I'm
not disagreeing with Ian, but the young lads, Bristol City have got to try and get in the playoffs. And I'm not being rude.
100%.
I'm not being rude. The young centre-halves might play a cup game or a game here and there. If they're in the team every week and the young midfielders are in the team every week, they're not going to get in the top six.
Yeah. I mean, my view on Kalas is fit and on form, and those two words haven't gone in the same sentence for a year. But fitting on form, I think he's the best defender at the club. But he's already kicked a ball for a year. And my understanding at the moment is Kalas wants to stay, but he's not happy at part of his pay surrounding appearances. So City have obviously gone to him. They've done the same as they've done with everybody else, like Naki, and said, right, you're on X £1,000 a week. It's going to be X minus 50%. And what they probably said to Thomas Kalas, and this isn't inside information, I'm just saying this is what's rumoured to be going on. You get more money if you make 20 appearances. I mean, all you can do is make yourself available for selection. If Nigel Pearson doesn't pick him, then that's not his fault. But apparently he isn't happy about reduced terms. And it could be also, you could throw in there the duration of contract. One way or the other, then leaving all that aside, it's up to the medical team to say, right, yeah, no, he's fit now, he's fine, he'll be available, you know, barring accidents, he'll be available for as many games as we think anybody else
will. Well, we want him to be available for 30+. I mean, Gary, do you agree with Ian's view that when he's fit, he's the best defender at the club?
No doubt. I'm just laughing here to myself. When I was at Notts County at the end of my career, 25% of my wages was made up in appearance money.
Wow.
And I had, I think one day I had two broken legs and a broken arm, and I still declared myself fit. This will get me appearance money. But it can be an incentive if you look after yourself. But yeah, I mean, he come into the team, I think, for two games. One of them was a Cardiff game, and there was another home game, and he was like a man possessed. He was outstanding.
Yeah.
If it would get him fit, what an asset. If it would get him fit and keep him, what an asset.
But you'd have thought he'd have had options by now, wouldn't you? Because I would imagine
He probably has. I don't know. Ian might know better. But sometimes you can't be happy at a club. Who thinks that players always want to leave? Some of them do. I'm sure he could go anywhere in Europe if he wanted to. You know, international footballer, got a good CV, but he might be happy in Bristol.
The money, I mean, the money's obviously it's, you're professional sportsman, so the money's got to come into it. But you've also, I think he's also got to be fair and reasonable because he comes and plays out of his skin for City, and we're at the right end of the table and we're attracting the right attention. That also reflects on him, and somebody's likely to come in and say, well, all right, Thomas, you come and pay for us. Here's 7 million quid, Bristol City, we'll have him. I mean, it does cut both ways, but I think one way or the other, I'd really like to see
Yeah, they're not going to
flipping
get
Thomas.
£7 million from him because he's out of contract now. If
He's yeah, well, I
30.
mean, if he
He's
signed
30
in,
this summer. He's not
if he
coming
signed a
now.
new,
Yeah.
yeah,
Somebody's
but
going to take
if
him
he signed a
now.
new contract and it all, say he signed a 2-year contract and he was playing out of his skin, then what I'm saying is you will get money for him, whereas at the moment he's out of contract, he can go and sign anywhere as a free agent,
Well,
can't
he's
he?
going to be another one of the high value signings that walked out the door. Let's look at midfield. Let's look at midfield, Gary. And I'll just rattle off the names that are there. You know, Matty James, Alex Scott, Joe Williams, Andy King, Mark Sykes, Eamon Benaroos. Then you've got the youngsters, Kadji, Sam, your lad Josh, obviously being released along with some of the others. Hanoa, obviously out the door, one would imagine. And what was and then we're starting getting down to Omar Taylor Clark and that lot. I mean, the midfield, the manager has said that there are not enough goals coming from midfield, and we seem as though towards the end of last season we were playing with two defensive midfielders sat in front of the back four and one in the offensive role, which was that. I mean, you can argue about formations and what have you, but. Have we got a problem in midfield, Gary? Yeah, that's where our biggest asset exists.
Yeah, I mean, how many goals did Alex Scott score last
One,
season?
maybe two.
One legal.
For like, and that's another sort of counter argument. If you're going to sign Alex Scott, and you sat around the table with the chairman in the recruitment meeting and the manager, and you say we're going to pay £25 million for this attacking midfield player, and somebody says how many goals did he score, and you say one, you might get a few raised eyebrows. So Matty James is what he is. I like him. Dependable, solid, reliable, always, plays to a certain level, I think. 6.5, 7 out of 10 every week. That's
Yeah.
all you want. And after that, who you're gonna put alongside him week in, week out. I mean, you didn't mention Vyman, who's played in midfield or attacking midfield at times. And we ended up with a centre half, Cal Naismith, playing in
Yeah.
midfield. So I think, you've got to be looking. Alex Scott, I think, will move on, if I'm honest, because there is a time to sell people, and that time might be now, coming back from the World Cup. So I'd think that probably going to have to add at least two midfielders. And if you can get that goal scorer midfielder, I mean, he's too old now, but I always liked the player that I always wanted to see play for Bristol City in recent years was Conor Hourihan
Yeah.
with Plymouth. Someone like that, aggressive, can do everything, but scores a goal from a set play, gets in the box, nicks a goal,
Left
creates a
sided.
goal. Yeah, someone like that is sort of a good fit for me.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So you'd sell, you think Scott will go? Because the other
Oh,
question is assists as well. And Ian, you know the stats there. How many assists did Scott have last season?
I think he got three. It was either three or four assists. I mean,
I mean, the hype that's associated with him, it's almost like he got hyped up. And if you look at the little glimmers, like the Man City game. And what have you? And then some people will say, "Oh, but he doesn't do the final assist. He does the ball before the assist when they're trying to defend him." But I'll be honest, I think he's a very talented, exceptionally talented lad. But I think he's a little bit of style over substance, And I think we need just—is that harsh, Gary?
No, I've seen something probably saying he was the greatest Bristol City player of all time. I don't think
No
he's
way.
anywhere
No.
near
No.
that accolade. I mean, he is talented, no doubt about that. Up until, I think, the Preston game, he probably hadn't scored or hadn't created a goal. I mean, Massengo, he was exactly the same, never scored a goal.
No.
And I thought he was always the fans sang the song and he looked, he'd do...
Got the hair and everything like that, yeah.
But, when you analyse his contribution, assists, probably the first one was this season, earlier in the season, and never scored a goal. So, even me, I scored the odd goal. You know what I mean?
Unless he signs a contract extension, which would protect City for having him for another year, because his value we've got to sell him now while his stock is as high as
You're talking about Alex Scott.
I
think they've done it before. Who was the centre forward? Maynard.
Yeah.
Could have sold them millions of pounds. They got the timing wrong. They didn't get what they should have got for him.
Well, and then he got injured pre-season, didn't he, on the ski run up at Cheltenham back in the day.
And I'm going to say, and Ian, again, with your stats, and I'll probably say it off the top of my head a little bit, he was out the team, and Bristol City didn't miss him. They got some good results when he was injured with his knee, was it? And if you look at the results, I don't think it was like nobody said, "Oh, we're missing him." They got a couple of good results.
You're talking about Alex now, then, yeah?
Yeah.
No, there was that little run just over Easter. You're right. He missed three games, and we were undefeated in that run. Yeah.
Stoke? And then the home game on the Monday might have been Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
So listen. They've got an asset, they've got a quality player. No, I'm not questioning his ability. He's outstanding for a young player, but sometimes you have to cash in.
Yeah, no, and that's right. Ian, Gary's just said, he feels we need two strong midfielders. And Gary's also said about bringing players in that will add value to the team, right? Mm-hmm. We've got to be out there to get better players than what we've got. And Joe Ryan coming in clearly adds some quality, but to get better players than what we've got, if we sell Alex Scott, let's say 20 million plus add-ons, right? But let's pick that conservative figure. We've got to be going out and spending in the 2.5 to 3 million bracket to get better players than what we have at present, because so they walk straight in to the side. Yeah, and one of them sits, two of them go into the middle of the park, because we can't rely on Joe Williams from a fitness point of view. Naismith missed half of last season, didn't he? Yeah.
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 Well, the problem, the issue is we have a terrible habit of key players getting injured at the same time. And for most of last season, we had 4 to 6 players out. Now I'm talking about senior players, and for this purpose of this, we've got a first team squad of 23 players, and that's including Eamon Benaroos. All right, so who's a young man, but he was getting selected regularly for the first team, and I think he's a really promising player. And I've said, and no doubt I'll get pilloried for this if it doesn't come to fruition. But if Scotty moves on and Eamon takes his place, over the same period of games, Eamon will get more goals and assists than Alex Scott. But going back to, if you take the Maynard situation, Steve Lansdowne, he promised Steve Lansdowne he was going to sign a new contract.
And he never did.
Leicester bid 6.5 million for him. So we rejected it. He left in the Christmas to go to West Ham under Sam Allardyce for 1.6 million.
Yeah, what you're forgetting, Ian, what you're forgetting there, he got injured that pre-season, or it might have been the season before, and we stuck with him. In fact, I think it might have been the season before, and we stuck with him, and he wouldn't sign that contract. And Colin Sexton said to me that, it was the player turned down that move to Leicester, and it was like £7 million. Yeah, and as you say, we ended up getting £2 million.
I don't know about that, but going back to Scotty, which is where this discussion started, the club are looking for something in the region of £30 million for him. Now, I'm looking at players that Premier League clubs are buying. So you had the lad, was it João Pedro at Watford?
Mm. Yeah.
£30 million, Brighton. Deal done. Brighton have also bid £30 million for a Chelsea reserve defender they've had on loan called Levi Colwill. And Chelsea turned it down. And I think with Alex, going back to what Gary said earlier on, I mean, there's two things. Something that Gary said on Radio Bristol resonated with me is that we can't keep moving up two positions every season and saying, wow, look at the progress we're making. And the second thing is that someone has to want that player, and it's someone on a board or a recruitment director or going down the City Ground, let's say Steve Lansdowne, who make the final decision of who goes out the door and who comes in for that matter, because he has to sign off the budget. It's going to say, well, hang on, we're signing this lad and we're spending 30 million. The only way you could sell it to someone is say, well, look at what he can do. He's already playing for England under the 20s. We're signing him based on his potential. Yeah. We're not signing him based on where he is today. Now, it's a question of, is someone prepared to outlay 25 million quid plus 5 million pounds worth of meaningful add-ons for a player with Alex's undoubted ability, but with his existing record? And I honestly can't see that happening. Now, if it does, I'd like to see him go somewhere like either Brighton or Borussia Dortmund, who are brilliant at developing players. And then when the player's doing really well, you know, you look at players like Haaland, Jude Bellingham, then selling them for massive...
You know, here's an interesting one, Gary.
I honestly can't see it. It's my humble opinion.
So. Yeah, Gary, if Alex went to a top six club, he's got a bench warm, and unlike most of his England under 20 teammates, he's got more minutes on the pitch in probably one of the toughest leagues in the world. Yeah, well, you know, probably the sixth most toughest league in the world, the Championship. Yeah,
yeah.
If he went to a top club, an elite club, and by that I'm talking like clubs in the top six, if he was, could you see the possibility of him being loaned back for a season so we get the best of both worlds? Yeah.
No, and if you, I don't know, £30 million to buy something for £30 million and lend it to anyone is a
20, no, let's say 20 million.
Whatever, 20 million, 25 million. I think if he moves on, he's moving on in his mind. You know, Alex Scott, let's turn it round and put yourself in the position of the player. I'm going to get a transfer for £20 million to Tottenham Hotspur, but I'm going to stay in Bristol for the next season. It's not, it works both ways. It's all right. It's fantasy, really, isn't it? City fans, oh, what a good deal that'll be. We can watch him play for another season. But if you're the player, you want to go and train with Harry Kane every day and be coached by the manager every day. And
whoever that might be at Tottenham.
Yeah, I'm just saying, yeah.
And if Harry's there.
Yeah, but it's just, no, and it's
I take your point, yeah.
It could be anyone. So you don't really want, do you get the same Alex Scott invested in Bristol City if he's on loan from...
Which, and that, Gary, dovetails in with Nigel's stock answer for when he's questioned about loans. You don't want to develop other clubs' players. But hang on,
that's different. Luton Town got loan players. The best players were the loan players. It works. So there's a difference between Alex Scott, who plays every week, and a young player at Man City or Chelsea or Man United that doesn't play, that wants to play.
Mm.
So it's a different scenario. I don't get that. That will always stick in my mind, that that comment about we haven't got the right culture for I don't understand.
What's he going on about with that? I never got that. What's he mean?
They've got the stadium, they've got the fan base, they've got the training ground. And if you can't sell that to a young player who wants to come in and play in your first team, then what can you? I took that as he didn't have the... I think he might have said, and if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. I took it. He didn't have the right people in the dressing room. And I don't get that either.
That's so, exactly, he's got in Gary the dressing room Andy King and Matty James, who
were his two. I think that is where City can improve. They can, and yeah, you got to pay a loan fee and you got to pay wages. But if you get the right one, they can make a massive difference to your team.
Tammy Abraham, the classic example, 2016-17, his goals kept us up. Yeah. End of story.
Yeah.
And let's talk about loans. I want to talk about forwards in a minute, but and it plays to what we've been talking about with defenders as well. Rob Atkinson, you know, he's been a good acquisition. 1.6 million quid. He's had a few health problems. He's had a few attitude problems. And, you know, he seems as though he's come through that. But he's out until November, Ian? Yeah, Atkinson out.
It'll be October, November, because normally with what he's got the same injury as Andy Byman had. And that kept him out for about a season.
So he's not around, right? For me, right, rather than, and I think you've both said we need some centre-halves coming in as well. But for me, with Atkinson, who would be probably a first pick, right, it would make sense to get a bloody good loan defender for half a season to cover that off rather than have to go out and buy a defender and sign him on a three-year contract, because he's either got to be better than Rob Atkinson so that when Rob Atkinson is fit, Rob has to fight for his place. Because if he comes in and he's another one to make up numbers and Rob Atkinson steps ahead of him, do you see my logic there, Gary?
That's not a bad argument. I can't argue with that at all. I mean, we look at, and just thinking to myself, what's happened this week? Joe Law probably being called up to the Welsh senior side and probably won't get, you know, he probably wouldn't be in the starting 11 at the start of the season. That's an unusual situation. But, it doesn't matter. Centre-half, centre-midfield, centre-forward, a good loan player is worth his weight in gold, no doubt about it. But
Sunderland used it to good effect as well, didn't they?
Everybody has. You know, the Sheffield United got players from Man City, and there's probably Bristol City are one of the few clubs, and I don't even think they've had a loan player all season, have they? They'll be one of the few clubs in the Championship that haven't had a loan player.
Well, it's funny because when Brian Tinian made the point, we went to a dinner and Brian was speaking and the subject of loan players came up. And this thing about you don't want to develop another club's players. And I thought, that doesn't sound right. But I thought, anyway, so
I can't develop your own team, though.
I contacted Sheffield United fans via social media and one thing and another. And I said, look, you've got promoted to the Premier League, but you've got these lads in on loan from Man City. Do you mind developing those players for another club? How many out of a dozen that I conversed with do you think said yes?
None.
What they said is, if we can, those players will probably be with us again next season, because let's be honest, they're not going to get in Man City's team.
No.
They ain't that good. And if you looked at the bench that Man City had the other day, all right, I know they lost a game at Brentford, but dear Lord, you know, the bench was something like Grealish, Haaland, De Bruyne, and they didn't lose 7-0 to Brentford, and they could have easily won the game. So those players aren't going to get in. And I mean, Southampton, I know it all went Pete Tong for them, but they signed quite a few young players from Man City at the start of the season for fees.
Mm.
And I'm not suggesting we do that because we haven't got that kind of dough. But with these clubs coming down, you've got five clubs we're up against. Sorry, six new clubs. There's only one of them will have less money and less crowds than us, and that's Plymouth.
Yeah. All
All
right.
the others, three of the others will have parachute money. Now, you then add in Herberts like Watford and West Brom, who are still getting parachute money, and the division starts to look pretty
Right.
horrible.
Well, we'll talk about the
But really,
division in a moment.
you're
We'll talk about
lose,
the
which is
division
all
in a
the strength
moment
we
because,
can get.
yeah, it's reflected with the betting and how it lines up with the runners and riders. Let's just talk about the team though. Up front, again, these are the players here now: Harry Cornick, Anas Mehmeti, Andy Vyman, Tommy Conway, Sam Bell, Naki Wells, and I'm going to throw Seb Palmer Holden in there because he's somebody that, seemed to be there or thereabouts. I mean, Gary, I don't see Harry Cornick on everything we've seen so far as being, I'm not a target man, but a big, a focal point up front. And I think we've got some good players there that would walk into most of the teams without parachute payments in this division, but we've not got the right blend. So what do you say to, I mean, how do you assess Harry Cornick and Anas Mehmeti, who both came in for the second half of the season?
Truthfully,
Yes.
if that's the level of recruitment, and I hope I'm wrong, by the way. It's not like a personal attack by any means, but Harry Cornick, Luton let him go, and they've just been promoted to the Premier League. So if I can't think one why he wanted to leave Luton to come to Bristol City when they're in that position with the opportunity to play in the Premier League. He's not a centre forward. He's an up and downer. He's just an up and downer, wide midfield player. He's not a dribbler. Doesn't go past people. Mehmeti has got talent, but he's all right foot and he plays on the left. And at this level, defenders have worked him out already.
Yeah.
So he wants to go inside. If you show him on his left foot, then he can't go on the outside. And I got a little bit excited when I first seen him, but he didn't finish the season in the team.
No.
He hasn't, he's not a, if you're signing players and we're trying to improve the squad, they've got to be nailed on starters, and both them players aren't.
Gets back to the point that we made earlier about players coming in there, because both of those, there's wages involved. We may have signed them in the summer, maybe we got them earlier, but I agree with you, Gary, there 100% that they're not players that are gonna force other players
Nailed on,
out.
got to be nailed on. You're going to come to Bristol City and you're going to play, and it's going to take someone to really work hard to knock you out the team. And they're in the team and they're out the team. Mehmeti is your wide, I mean, wide players is since Eliasson's gone. We haven't had wingers, we don't have wide players, natural wide players, wingers. Campling's natural on the left side, but a fullback. Jada Silva's natural wide player, but a fullback or a wing back. We haven't got natural attacking wide players, and we haven't had them for a couple of seasons.
Yeah, longer than that, actually. Ian, I mean, it is a conundrum up front, isn't it? Because if you say, and some people say, oh, you can't talk about structures, but if we're playing, it seems to be like a 4-3-3 at the moment. Yeah, or you could say a 4-2-1-3 or something like
Four,
that.
two,
But I
three,
call it
one.
four. It's a 4-2-3-1. It's
Well,
basically.
who's the one? Who's the one? Who do you pick? Who's the one then?
Well, we haven't got a natural one. Now, if you by okay, so what do I mean by that? If you look at Coventry, they've got Gyökeres, and if
Yeah.
you look at Sunderland, and if he'd have stayed fit, Sunderland may well have
Stuart.
through the playoffs. They've got Stewart. Now, the start of the season when we played Sunderland, they beat us at Ashton Gate. Now, I know Naismith kicks a couple in the, set a couple of them up himself, but Ross Stewart and Ellis Sims, who's known from Everton, destroyed us. We couldn't cope with him any way, shape, or form. And I think that's the type of player. And Sunderland got Stewart out of Scottish football, I believe, for not a lot. And Jokeres came, I think he went there from Coventry from Swansea. Now, that's the type of player that you need to be playing if you're playing that one. And I don't think we've got a natural one. I don't think Naki is. And the other thing is, if you're going to play with somebody smaller and slighter up front or somebody with different skills, like Tommy Conway is quite quick. He's got fabulous movement for a young player, and so Sam Bell. But he's not head on, he's not a tall, powerful, back-to-goal target man. And you've either got to say, stop playing so many eyeballs, because unless you're going to win the second ball, because their defender, 9 times out of 10, is going to win it, unless you're going to pick up that header in midfield, then you're always going to be on the back foot. So get it into his feet. So you're playing more like Barcelona than the old Wimbledon, right? And hoofing the big diagonal, because we just haven't got the players to do it. If you look at our players before the game, when the two teams line up, some weeks it's like Land of the Giants.
Yeah.
Because they're averaging 6'2" and we're averaging about 5'10". And that, you know, as speaking as a little guy myself, a good big un, it might be different in the case of people like Lionel Messi, but he's a bit of a one-off. A good big un's always better than a good little un. And I just don't, you often hear this word banded about physicality. And I don't see a great deal of physicality. And that's what and Nigel Pearson said. This is more or less, I've used the phrase, we've got a non-scoring, non-assisting midfield. And Nigel Pearson said the same on Radio Bristol when Jeff was interviewing him. He said, well, one of our biggest problems is we don't score goals from midfield. And then he added, even our 10s don't score. So you can see that he must have something in his mind of how he's going to address that. But, you know, 4-2-3-1 is like 4-3-3 when you're attacking, and it's 4-5-1 when you're defending. That's how it's meant to work. But Gary alluded to crossing. I mean, our two biggest assist makers last season, and they got 6 each, one was Naki Wells and the other was Cam Pring. Now, Cam Pring, I think, is probably the best crosser of the ball we've got at the club.
Yeah.
Mark Sykes plays wide, and that is his position, not fullback. But he plays in that wide position, but he's got to improve his crossing about 50.
Oh, he can't cross. I thought he played well at right back in the latter stages of the final home game of the season. Did you see that one, Gary, against Burnley? He slotted there. And if you say George Tanner's like the man with the ball, Sykes can revert to right back. Again, it puts a question, where does that leave Kane Wilson, if anywhere? But
well, nowhere, because he hasn't featured all season. So
no.
He won't come out.
I say, did you? So I think we're in agreement that we've got some good players, but it's up front. This is now, but you know, how do you pick what is the best combo? We don't know what
Tommy
that is.
Conway's got a player for me,
and Tommy Conway's in. Tommy Conway.
We're talking about Alex Scott. I think all of a sudden, he'll be on a lot of people's radar now. Tommy Conway.
Tommy,
and it'd be like all of a sudden they might get a stupid bid for him, because he's always going to score. He's a goal scorer, and he wants to score. And I think he's improved unbelievably, really developed into a really good young player.
And he's got a bit of strength about him, hasn't he? Yes.
He worked hard. He's added that to his game. I can't say watching him through playing in the junior teams, he always sort of ran himself into the ground, but he does now. So he's added that to his game. He's always been a goal scorer. He wants to score. He enjoys scoring. So he's got a play for me. When he's fit, he'll be in the team every week.
So he's one of your starters up front.
Yeah, and I agree with Ian. You need Naki Wells, tried and tested at this level. Good goal scoring record. But you need someone to lead the line. You need a focal point. you need a physical element. You need someone to stretch and occupy defenders. We haven't got a target. We struggle. If Max has got to take a goal kick, we see the centre halves up on the in the wide areas trying to sort of find an angle to try and keep the ball alive. If it goes down the middle of the pitch, it comes straight back. So that type of physical centre forward, someone like, we're talking about Famara, someone like that who can, love him or hate him, I loved him because he defended corners. And you get your 12 goals a season.
Yeah.
12. Yeah. It's another 12 that you get
into the mix. Because, Andy, talking about goal scorers, the season before, season ending spring 22, you had the WSM who scored 50 between them and they made 2/3 of them. And that was a good combination for what it's worth.
That's a great point that forwards over the years who've done well down there have created their own goals. The ones I always go back to in that sense was Leroy Leiter and Steve Brooker. And the other side of it, from what Gary was saying, you've got Tommy Conway and Naki Wells, probably your best front two. So should we be playing more with a front two as opposed to a one with the players that we've got now? That would be my question.
Do you agree with that, Gary? Tommy and Naki up front?
Yeah, you can get two up front, then it's what you put behind it, possession-based teams, overloads, and City, when they played two up front in seasons gone by, were always outnumbered in midfield. I remember watching the likes of Fulham, Johansson and people like that, just Barry Bannon playing for Sheffield Wednesday, just having the freedom of the park because there were spare players. So it's two up front is good. What shape are you going to play behind that? I wouldn't want to see them go back to playing five defenders. If you're talking about 5-3-2, whatever you want to do, 4-1-3-2, you become very narrow. You've got to have attacking fullbacks. So it's, two. And again, backing up Ian's point, at times, lots of teams do play with three central defenders in the Championship because they've got the players to do that. And that means City's formation, often the centre forward was playing against three giant centre-halves. And that was a struggle. I remember Sam Bell playing in a game, dumped through the middle against three centre-halves, no change. And I've seen Tommy and Naki play against three centre-halves, and it is difficult.
It's difficult.
That I go back to where we did play 4-1-3-2 was Birmingham at home, and we absolutely
4-2 best home games of the season.
Naismith first played in that, he was the one in the 4-1-3-2. And what I like about Naismith, because I criticise his defending, or the fact that he does make ricks, but he always wants to pass the ball forward. And that's something I think some of our players are guilty of, that will play the easy pass, the sideways one, the backwards one, whereas he likes to get the ball possibly on the half turner in front of the back forward, he'll look forward and he'll ping a nice diagonal. And I don't mind a long pass or a ping, but it's when we just, like Gary alluded to, when Max has got to play the ball forward, play it long. And a lot of time he's hitting it towards Naki Wells. Now, Naki competes, he jumps into the centre halves and things like that. But come on, he's 5'6". Some of these guys are a foot taller than he is.
Talking about Max, Gary, the goalkeeping situation, we've just got Max because this lad, Bajic, I know he's been called up for the France under-21s, but he's not even getting in the league side there. The last good number two that we had, that Nicky Mempar, I always liked him, but should we be looking to get better than Max or just get a decent understudy? What do you think in the goalkeeping department?
Well, you've got Harvey as backup at the moment. But you need competition. I wouldn't call him a number one or a number two. I think you need two, three, if possible, really solid goalkeepers competing for one position. And if that means that Nigel has to consider that he can bring in a more experienced, and I think that is the key. I couldn't see a younger, Max is 25 or 26 now, a younger goalkeeper coming in to take to be number one. But certainly if you could add a more experienced goalkeeper to put pressure on Max, that would be good situation for City.
Yeah,
and a good situation for Max.
Yeah,
because why do you think that? You know, you're just going to sort of have an easy ride, and he knows what it's all about because he's been an understudy for long periods in his career. And
Before we just look forward to next season, question for you, Gary. And again, it reverts to defending. Duncan Idahun featured in a few games towards the end of 21-22 season. Looked the part. Came back for pre-season, gets farmed out to Carlisle, doesn't do well there, seems as though he gets sent back here, and then towards the tail end of the season, or from March onwards, he's a regular for the successful second-string team, named as captain.
They weren't successful towards the end.
I would have thought, no, they weren't very towards the very end, but I would have thought he'd have been included in a matchday squad. Why name him captain? And then not bring him in when he brought in the likes of Callum Wood and Harry Leeson ahead of him?
I think it's pretty obvious. I think I'm not saying Nigel is not predictable. That's not the word, but he is consistent. And I think the fact that he didn't pick him speaks volumes.
Applies to Kane Wilson as well then, really, doesn't it? Yeah.
Of course. It's not like... You know, you read newspapers and what have you, and all the mystery that surrounds selection or non-selection to me, and you know, sort of with my background and my experience of, if you're not playing very well, you're not getting in the team. And, you know, go and say what you want, but I don't think that Nigel has seen him as someone that can step in and step up to the mark.
Okay. I mean, transfer, nothing's happened yet. Transfer is in or out for that matter. If we sign Joe Bryan and that lad McCrory from Aberdeen, do you know anything about McCrory?
No.
Nothing at all. No. Ian?
I do.
Go on. Yeah. Where's he? If we sign both of those, where are they going to play? What positions are they going to play if we sign them? Because they seem to be...
McCrory can play a number of positions, so we're back to this. Where is he best?
Don't want that.
Square pegs and square.
So specialists, not generalists.
Yeah, I'll tell you where he has played for Aberdeen this season. Most recently, he's been playing right wing back because they played three at the back, but sometimes they play four and he plays right back. At the start of the season, they were playing a three. And he was playing on the right-hand side of the three. And in conversations I've had with Aberdeen fans via social media, and I had a couple of phone calls as well, I said, where is he best then? You know, because once, when you talk to some fans of some clubs, you get it in the ear all of, oh, why does he want to leave Aberdeen and come and play for Bristol City? And once you get rid of all those characters, you can have a sensible conversation. And three people completely independently said to me, his best position is as a defensive midfield player. So there you go.
All right, so if we're going to buy him, we're going to pay a fee for him.
Yellows, one red, and he scored five goals this season.
Hmm. If we're going to pay a fee for him, which is allegedly being, I've seen the figure of up to 2 million quoted, so he comes in, and he's a starter. And Joe Bryan comes in on top end wages for us, but for no money. Those are two players. That's two of your starters. And I'm not going to go into the detail of it here, but I'm trying to work out how the rest of the side comes together without you having overload of mediocrity. Because as Gary said, it's about having specialists. And we've got what we seem to have a habit of over the years down here is having quantity, not quality. And Ian, you were saying, you know, we've got a 23-man first team squad, but actually we need six players to cover off the injuries. Let's get back to Luton again, right? Gary, Luton, you know, you saw them. Do you think Bristol City is still a holiday camp for some people?
Goodness me, I hope not. I mean, that's a slight on lots of people's character. If it is, it shouldn't be. Listen, I've seen Luton, they trained harder than any team I've seen train in years. You know, in training, sprinting. It sounds stupid, but when you do running in training, they did it with real high intensity. No excuses about how hot it was or anything like that. They worked hard. The recruitment spot on. And I know Mick Harford really well. He sort of is in charge of that. They used data analysts. You're saying, Ian, said that they sat there in the recruitment meeting. They've got facts and figures. You know, they know what the players will produce. They've got dozens and dozens of reports because they've watched the player. They've got character references. It all goes into the melting pot. And boy, oh boy, have they been successful because of that. But holiday camp.
All right, that's harsh.
It's not. You said, do you think? I'm not saying that you suggested that it was, but I really, really hope that it's not. I mean, they've got a top-class environment, as good as any training ground in the land, if you go up there. And
you talked, Gary, about intensity. And I say, I watched the playoff final and I watched that second leg against Sunderland at Kenilworth Road. And that intensity, the way they close players down and what have you, and the physicality, two words, intensity, physicality,
spot
pace,
on.
That's different
spot
to intensity.
Power, powerful
all,
players.
All of those things, why can't we emulate, what's stopping us emulate that?
People, it's only people. So you look at the centre forward, the boat from Walsall, for not a lot of money. The fullbacks on loan, the centre midfield players on loan, and you know even the centre half who they got from Lockyer, who they've got from Bristol Rovers. You know they've done a really good job.
Where did they get Morris from, Gary? I think he's the one that they paid some money for.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, but. It's just people, you know. When Dean Holden was in charge, Bristol City had horrific injury list.
Mm.
I think what they're calling the HPC was it? I think Ian called it the hamstring
probability center.
It's just brilliant, and they have had the problems with injuries. It's I'm not criticising anyone. I'm just saying it's just people in it. You get the right people into your recruitment department. You get the right people in to do your sports science, and it's
so Gary, picking up what you said there, because the data and the analytics, that's not Luton haven't got access to that. Every club's only got access to that. Every club can get that. I mean, this is a critical trump. This is going to suss out how good our recruitment really is over the next 10 weeks, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, recruitment is, it's a process. You're planning for, you shouldn't just be planning for this end of season. You should be planning for the January window and you should be planning for next season. You have your target lists. You get all the information from scouting platforms, who's out of contract and when they're out of contract. So if you do your due diligence, if you like to use a fancy phrase, then you know you can get the players that are out there and available. And it is a marketplace. There is competition, there is a pecking order, and you can imagine that the people that pay the most money will attract the better players.
Of course.
And then there's the next level of players, and City have got to try and be at the top of the next level, you know.
Yeah.
Look at the teams that have come up. I've got money. Ipswich have got money. Sheffield Wednesday have got money. The teams that have come down clearly have got money.
Mm.
So you've got to work smart. And there are hundreds and hundreds, I can tell you, of talented players at the lower levels, and if you can get the right one, then you can do well. So yeah. That's what you do.
Ian, do you think I probably was being harsh suggesting that the holiday camp, but how do you, and I think Nigel's done a good job in, you know, we're not the pushover that we were, and that's evidenced by fewer goals conceded and, as you said, turning draws into wins. But realistically, well, you know,
we've turned Luton
and Coventry have set the bar, and Millwall to some extent, because they could have crept in. That, you know, if the Gary says people, I say attitude. Yeah. How do we get that mindset, backs against the wall, everybody together, committed, that intensity? How do we get that?
I think that comes from the manager and to an extent the coaches. But if you look at Luton, changed their manager, but their manager was bright enough. Rob Edward was bright enough to think, yeah, I know I like to play a passing game and this, that, and the other and be more of a Swansea style, but I can't do that with this lot when he went to Luton. So he looked at what he had and what they did brilliantly. If you watch the playoff game, I didn't look at that game and think, wow, these two sides are brilliant. But what I felt was that Luton in particular had huge belief. They thought they would win the game. And I think we're still a bit soft and we don't think we can win the game. It does come down to physicality, because if I was never tall enough to be a centre-half, although I did play there and I'd be behind two big blokes in a three sometimes. But if I walked down that on a pitch and I looked across and I saw that Adebayo and Carlton Morris, I think I'm going to be lucky if I get out of this without my head being cut open and losing some teeth today. Mm. Because they're big, they're professional athletes. And by the way, particularly Morris, he scores goals and he can play. So you're looking at him, you're thinking, right, so you're feeling uncomfortable before the game kicks off. And also, please bear in mind that we beat Luton 2-0 and it could have been 4 or 5 at Ashton Gate at the start of the season.
Mm. Yeah, they were poor.
But what they've got, and they'll definitely lose out when they move to a new stadium, because they've got that horrible small pitch. Mm. It's dark. It's horrible. The floodlights are awful. The crowd are right on top of you. And they don't get big crowds. They don't need big crowds because they just shout and bawl and scream. And I've been in Luton's hospitality, or what passes for it, when I was living up there. And with Mick Harford that day. And the stick that the benches get and everybody gets, because they're literally right on top of the dugouts on that side. And I saw us lose. I think we got beat 5-0 that day, and Steve Arad was playing up front for him, and he beat us up as well.
Yeah, I know. I remember I was at that game as well. Steve Arad,
I think it's that.
Big lad.
Haven't got it's physical strength, the physicality. It's strength of mind. And I don't mean this, be positive, don't be negative and all the rest of it. If a bloke's a foot taller than you and 3 stone heavier, he's going to smash you all over the place. So you can be as positive as you like. But, you know, and I can, you know, go down the HPC and wave at Nigel Pearson and say, please, Nigel, can I come in and play for the first team? Well, any trouble is, Ian, you're crap. So, no, not really. Yeah, but I got a great attitude. I'm really positive and I love the city. Yeah, I know, mate, but you can't play football. So I think to get instill that belief, it starts with the manager. Then you need good leaders in the dressing room. And I look at our team and I think, Matty James, Joe Williams, Naismith. Yeah, but after time, they're injured. So who's
That's a good point.
Who's your, you know, if you listen to football and you listen to people like Gary Neville talking, you have people like, well, I remember reading about Rio Ferdinand said when he moved to Man United, he shoved the ball sideways to Gary Neville and thought he'd done ever so well. And he said, the next minute, I got this Irish bloke right up in me grill, grabbing hold of me by the shirt. It's Roy Keane saying, this is Man United. We pass the ball forward. Don't forget, you give me the ball. You don't need to do anything. Give me the ball or give it to Scholesy. And he's right up in his face and got all of his shirt.
Yeah.
Now, we got in our team that would do that. And I don't think we got that player.
No, no. Would you agree with that, Gary? You know, that we still need a leader?
It's a good point. And leaders in the dressing room is one thing. You want your leaders on the pitch.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Them out there every week, driving people forward. I've heard the last couple of seasons, Brunt, oh, he's good in the dressing room, but he never got on the pitch.
Danny Simpson,
and even with respect, because he's done well towards the end of the season, Andy King,
yeah.
We want, you know, I'll go and be good in it. I keep saying this, I'll go in the dressing room if you want to pay me 10 grand a week and tell a few jokes and tell people what they should be doing. £500,000 a year, I can do that still, and I'm 54. You want them out on the pitch every week. That's where you want the leaders.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's good. Okay, guys, I mean, look, looking at next season, they say squads, nobody's started chopping and changing yet, but you just look at the betting, you know, and it goes, not surprisingly, Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, Middlesbrough, Norwich, Watford, West Brom, Stoke, Coventry, Ipswich, Sunderland way down there, considering where they finished, Blackburn, Millwall, Swansea, Hull, Sheffield Wednesday, Bristol City. There we are, 40-1, I think it is. Yeah, or is it 33-1? It's
is that
40-1. We're in that group, 40-1 to get promoted. I don't think that's through the playoffs. That's to get promoted. I mean, when you look at the three relegated sides, two of those definitely are going to be in the top six. I think a couple of them have got a few. Would you agree, Gary, that maybe Leeds and Southampton have got a few issues off the pitch, or do you think the quality will guarantee them top six?
They'll be in the top six. You know, I would think Leeds, massive club. You know, when they got out of the Championship, they were playing some unbelievable football. That's changed, obviously, because the manager's changed.
Mm.
I can see, I don't know if he has, I've been away, probably Sam Allardyce might fancy that. And
take them up, finish his career, yeah.
He's left the club this morning.
He's left, has he? Well, yeah. Sam Allardyce won't fancy that.
thank you, Sky Sports. But yeah, no, they had the feeling, they were saying that they didn't think he'd want to stay because he said he never wants to manage in the Championship again.
All right. Mm.
Right. So anyway, sorry, Gary, you were saying Leeds, Leicester, Southampton. So that's three.
Norwich will be better.
Borough? What about Borough?
Middlesbrough, it'll be up there. You know, God knows what Ipswich are going to do, or Sheffield Wednesday, they'll be competitive.
Well, Ashton's going to try and buy Ipswich out of that division, isn't he? He's going to go out and spend big. If you're a member of the Arizona Pension Fund, you know, you're going to be gunning for Premiership football. That's where all your money's going next year. I mean, Sunderland, looking at this as a league table, that puts Sunderland down in about 10th.
Yeah.
I mean,
Sunderland aren't, they haven't got a massive wage bill. I know that for a fact, that they've got really, worked really hard to get the wages down. Probably moderate wages for that division, I would say. But the attraction of playing in that stadium in front of them supporters, it's going to be ultra competitive. You know, even like Plymouth come up, they'll be competitive. That'll be a tough place to go to, home park, passionate supporters. So you're asking us where City are going to finish, I suppose, at some point. Who knows? It's, you know, you get off to a good start and you can find some consistency, then they can be in and around it. But if they don't get off to a good start and get points on the board early, who knows?
Yeah. Ian, I mean, you know, I'll ask you, Gary, where do you think we're finished? And I think the inference there, but give me a number. A couple of places better than last season?
Well,
unless we get lucky.
Well, what happens if they don't? Where are we going?
There you go. Yeah.
Where are we going? So Nigel's been in charge 3 or 4 seasons, and we finish in a worse position than we did last season. Where are we actually going? Just treading water. just running on the spot, if you like.
And for some people, Ian, and you'd endorse this, there's a large cabal of fans that say, oh, we're happy with Championship football, you know, and like, oh, well, all these clubs have got parachute payments and, oh, well, they've had time. And then those that don't have it, oh, yeah, but they've been stable for a few years and what have you. You know, Luton and Coventry was a Division Two fixture 5 years ago. I saw Coventry.
Luton were in the conference not too long ago.
Yeah, Luke, well... Yeah, see, the fact that Luton, Coventry, Millwall, Preston have done better than us destroys that, oh, well, these people have got parachute payments argument. So it destroys it. Sunderland haven't got parachute payments. They got in the playoffs. Now, Sunderland are a big club. They get big attendances, right? They were top of the attendances in the Championship. And the highest we were seven. The highest that we could get is third because of the size of our ground, because we can only get 26 segregated. You get 27 for the rugby. Now, some people say, well, we've got the middling wage bill, so what's wrong with finishing in the middle of the table? Well, I think if you go into any competition, you try and win it. Doesn't mean you say you can, but and when people talk about progress, we've not made great progress on the field. Now, if you look at off the field, as Gary said earlier on, why wouldn't a player want to come to Bristol City with the facilities, the fan base? We've already sold 14,000 season tickets. And let's put it, it hasn't been going great. And the foot hasn't been a feast of fantastic football on many occasions this season or last. And we turned defeats into draws. But to go to the next level, my own view is if four people, and we won't be able to say how well we think we'll do until the start of the season and then September the 1st. When
the window's shut, agreed.
But my own view is if four players go out, and those one's already gone out, Jada Silva signed for Coventry, but if Callas, Scott and Andy King move out, then we need eight to come in. And the difficult thing, and I'd like to ask Gary about this, is if you're bringing people up in the market we're shopping in League One, League Two, and possibly the club's release lists of players that are already in the Championship, like Cal Naismith was. How do you get the quality of those players when the players going out the door, fitting on form, are, in the case of Callas and Scott, are high quality players?
You pay. You pay. So you're saying that we're looking at out of contract players, and I'm saying if you want to improve, then you've got to start investing in transfer fees. And the marketplace should be an open marketplace. We should be looking at Premier League loans. Should be looking in Scotland. We should be looking in spite, you know, you're never going to carry, but European players, they are out there. You can, and believe me, I've done it, and I've watched games all over Europe. There are quality players, but they come at a cost.
There you go. That's it. That's so it, investment.
Is reducing the costs, which is what Richard Gould was brought in to do, and it's been... one of the, you can call it an excuse, you can call it a reason. It's been one of the reasons that people have tolerated what we've done since Nigel Pearson came in, because there's always this caveat, yeah, but he's got to get rid of
all. Yeah, he's done that. He's done that now.
They're all on big wages. I mean, yeah. He didn't actually have to do much because all their contracts have run out.
Yeah.
So that's happened now. So yeah. Then we had, COVID, which... I'm not buying that much because everybody had COVID. That was the same for everybody in the league. It wasn't just in Bristol. So I think that those are gone. And he said when he first came in, it's going to take six windows, 3 years, three seasons to get us so we're challenging for the playoffs. So this season, I'm expecting us...
Well, that's the one. I mean, Gary said he's had three or four seasons. He's had two and a third seasons. That's what he's had, right? He's had 2 1/3 seasons, yeah, in charge. And this is the witching hour. This is where it's all coming home to roost, because Gary's just said, we need to invest. We need to do loans. We need to push the bar a bit higher. I mean, again, if you look at the three players that are names that look as though there'll be likely signings, McCrory, O'Brien, and Joe Bryan, right? Those three players, their best positions, you've already said, are right back, centre back, and left back, right? They're three positions that, to some extent, we don't really need strengthening at the moment.
Centre back, we really need.
Well, if Callas signs,
I'm talking about if he goes.
All right, but those are three that are coming in. I think the problem's in midfield. I really do. I think
we need midfield players as well. But at the moment, I just said that's eight, assuming those four go out. And so Callas is gone. De Silva, we know, is gone. Andy King and somebody by Scotty, which I honestly don't think they will for that kind of money. But if they do, fantastic for the boy and for the club. But you need to strengthen because we haven't got any left centre-backs.
We haven't got cover at right-back, left-back, goalkeeper, centre-half, centre-mid. You need players in every department.
No, well, you need eight, because I think the ones I said is you need a goalkeeper, you need a left back, because Jay's gone, you need one right centre back, you need two left centre backs, and Dave's idea about loaning one until Atco's fit, yeah, fine, no problem with that. Then you need a defensive central midfield player, although we have got ish some of them. Somebody in midfield who's creative, who does get assists and goals. So you're Barry Bannon, Brian Tinian type player. And then I think we need a nine, you know, a proper as described, if we're going to go with one at the top. So
there's money. Look, it's
playing
it's
fantasy different. Football. I just think
if Scott goes, it opens the doors to, because, okay, you talk about transfer fees. There's always the wages involved as well. And we don't know the detail behind all the finances, but never mind the money for Semenyo. Let's say that's in the bank to do with gets us out of any FFP issues. If Scott goes, it creates a platform. And realistically, if Scott went for 20 million, right, we probably could go out. We need to go out and spend 15 million of that straight away. And then 5 million plus the wages that have been saved on the ones that are going out. That's what we need to do to address the areas that both you guys have said. Hey, look, I'm conscious that we've taken your time, Gary. I really appreciate you taking time out on another lovely Sunday.
All right, I'm cheap.
You're not. Ian, as always, your measured views on there as well. And let's hope we have another 1,000 people listening to this one that listened to our last one. And we'll be back. Got a couple of editions coming up before the fixture one. But in the meantime, guys, thanks. And thanks, everybody, for listening. It's been a good one. And I'm sure we could have carried on talking.
There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robins are bob, bob, bobbing along. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live. love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bob-bobbing along.